Hello, this is Paul Green, WGN political analyst and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today at the City Club, we had a roundtable discussion on the March 15th primary in Illinois and around the country. We had Mike Flannery, Charles Thomas, and Marianne Ahern. We discussed all issues, national, state, and local, but obviously the number one topic was the state's attorney's race between Kim Fox and Anita Alvarez. Marianne, since you're next to me, each of the panelists will have 4 minutes or less or more to give their overall views, and then you will have a big Q&A, and there may be a slight chance that the moderator may jump in. A purely slight chance. So, Marianne Ahern, you're up 4 minutes.
Oh, wow. He just told me this 3 minutes ago, so I did not really prepare anything. But here are the three big stories of the night. Kim Fox, Hillary winning but barely, and the Rauner versus Madigan fight, with Madigan winning that fight. So let's take Kim Fox first. She is the it girl. Let's see how long it lasts, because, oh, be careful what you wish for. But I certainly was surprised that she won that big. I mean, I didn't know which way for sure it was going to go. But to win, to trounce Anita Alvarez, was amazing to me. I think that it's a tough job. It's a serious job. She's going to have a lot of folks who are going to say, okay, 900 attorneys, she has to manage them. She has the Chicago police who are going to say, wait a second, how are we going to work together? So she does have an opponent, Christopher Von Cook, Republican, who she does have to meet in November, but all things look as if Kim Fox is on her way to be the next state's attorney. An incredible, compelling personal story. The Tribune photo of her when she was 2 years old in Cabrini-Green, that really sort of said it all. But so there's that unbelievable story. The Hillary barely hanging on till 11:30 at night in Illinois, to me, Rahm Emanuel played a factor in that race. Otherwise, it would have been like Ohio, like North Carolina, it would have been done much sooner. And so, Sanders, from the Trump craziness of Friday night, which of course was another big story, but that sort of, I mean, in 3 days' time, we saw the chaos of the UIC Pavilion, the Bernie Sanders surge, the national polls showing he had a chance. If he had had perhaps another couple of days, he might have defeated Hillary Clinton in her home state. And why? Rahm Emanuel. They had signs. They linked Hillary Rahm. And they had them plastered all over the place. They practically put him in a phone booth and said, stay away. You know, don't come out till it's over. That was crazy. She only won by 50,000 votes in the city of Chicago. Okay, what does that tell you? And then finally, okay, the best fight of all, the Rauner versus Madigan. Oh, my goodness, those commercials. Aren't we glad they've gone away? But, you know, Rauner, even though the Rauner folks have already called to say, hey, you know, we really did have a couple wins. They're downstate. You know, we have a couple wins. Nobody up here knows about those wins, because everybody can see that your candidates here, and including Mike Madigan, won in such a big way that once again Mike Madigan gets to say, what are you asking for? Huh? You know, like, we'll see you later. I heard this story recently, and of course I can't verify it, but I gotta believe someone has told me that the first time that Rauner and Madigan met, the very first time they sat down, the speaker walked in with a 3x5 card with the names of all of the governors that he has outlasted and said, here you go. You know, welcome.
Hey,
welcome
now, wait a minute. This is St. Patrick's Day. Never let the truth interfere with a great
Absolutely.
Story. That's got to be true.
That's why I'm here. Anyway, those are my takeaways.
Great crown. Round of applause for Marianne. Well done, Marianne. Just think you had time to prepare. All right, Charlie Thomas, you're up.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
All right, Charlie.
You know, extemporaneous remarks here, same as Marianne, we've been so busy, we really haven't been able to prepare anything. But I think if I can divide it between the local, the Fox-Alvarez race, the state, the Madigan-Rauner, TIFF, and the national presidential primaries. First, starting with the local race, I was not surprised one iota that Kim Fox won and won big. I've known Anita Alvarez for a long time, and you know, she's worked in that state's attorney's office for decades, and she became accustomed to doing things the way the state's attorney's office had always done things, which is basically to look the other way in police abuse cases and really not aggressively investigate and pursue them. And I think that that's what happened in the Laquan McDonald case. And because of the video, it was revealed. How they do business there was revealed. And I think that Anita Alvarez really didn't think she had done anything wrong. She had only done things the way they had always been done, going back to her experiences in the office from when she was first assistant to Dick Devine and prior to that. So that's why she ran. I was surprised after the video was released that she even decided to run for another term. But I think she was convinced that because this is how we do things in the office, I can explain that to the public and they will understand my actions in this case. But I think there was a segment in the community that was loaded for bear, so to speak, to go after Anita Alvarez because of some other cases that had happened. Remember the Koshman case. Remember the Dante Servin case. Remember some of the wrongful convictions in which Anita Alvarez was very resistant to rehearing. This was the fertile ground for this uprising that occurred in 2 nights ago. And I think that when she lost by basically 3-1, or 2-1 to Kim Fox, that it was understandable in my view. Now, moving on to the state races, I agree with Marianne. Speaker Madigan, he took Bruce Rauner to school. He took his lunch, particularly on the south side in the Ken Duncan versus Julia Stratton race, which was the laboratory, so to speak, the place where both sides poured in all the big money in order to make their point. And I think Speaker Madigan won big there. And of course, he won big in his own 22nd legislative district, where he beat Jason Gonzalez. There are some real questions about how the speaker did it. I have some real concern about how he used the so-called criminal records of Ken Duncan and Jason Gonzalez in those campaigns. And I say he in the Duncan campaign, given the fact that we know that he wanted Ken Duncan gone because he wanted to make sure that he continued to have his supermajority in the House. But to use criminal records, particularly against African-American and black candidates, when trying to get those who have had, those black and Latino men who have had problems with the criminal justice system, to reintegrate them into society, Ken Duncan and Jason Gonzalez are shining examples of what can be done to reintegrate those who have had contact with the criminal justice system back into working society. For Speaker Madigan and for Brendan Riley, I hope he's not here because he was part of this.
Don't worry, you're not going to get an interview with any of them.
By the way, for them to do that is shameful. To make examples of these young men who are not criminals, who are shining examples of what we're all trying to accomplish in the world of reentry. And finally, on the national scene, Bernie Sanders surprised me. I didn't think he'd do as well as he did in Illinois. I think the explanation for it, Rahm Emanuel, and disdain for him, as Marianne explained it, was a big part of it, how well he did, particularly in the city of Chicago. As for the Republican side, Donald Trump styles himself as the world's greatest deal maker. He needs to make a deal right now with the Republican Party's mainstream to win the nomination. I believe it's going to go to the convention, And there, Donald Trump is at the mercy of the Republican bosses, no matter how well he does between now and the end of the campaign.
Round of applause for Charlie Thomas. Wish you'd be a little more assertive, Charlie, but it's okay. I know you had to hold back. Mike Flannery, you're up.
All right. I'm not going to repeat any of the things that my colleagues have said here, although I subscribe to much of what they said. I'll just hit a couple of other points. I didn't have anybody come up to me and tell me they were voting for Bernie Sanders because they hated Rahm Emanuel. I did have probably a dozen or more people. I live on the south side down on 102nd Street, and I was at dinner a couple of weeks ago at a restaurant up on Western Avenue, and I had two auto workers from the Ford plant at 126 and Torrance come over to me. They were voting for Sanders, and they liked Donald Trump because of international trade. And if you listen to those two guys as they delivered their stump speeches, they talked about NAFTA, they invade against NAFTA, they invade against the TPP that the president has negotiated and is hoping to get through Congress, but may not now because of this. And, you know, I talked with these guys and their wives for a few minutes. And, you know, for downtown Chicago, this is a huge thing, folks. Illinois has been a winner from NAFTA. Illinois and Chicago is one of the huge winners from NAFTA. 1.7 million jobs in Illinois depend on international trade. Now, it has devastated the manufacturing area. You know, and even Indiana, with the, you know, 51st out of 50 states in the District of Columbia in workers' comp costs. But United Technologies is moving 2,000 jobs from the Indianapolis area to Mexico, and they're going to pay the workers in Mexico about $3 an hour. So, you know, the race to the bottom is what's next? Indiana lowers the minimum wage to $3.
They'd like to do
this. This is a huge thing. But many, many jobs in downtown Chicago. My daughter works for a British company. A company that's constantly, she's over here in Washington, they're constantly moving people in from Europe, in from Hong Kong. They're here because of O'Hare. And, you know, if we start pulling our horns in on this stuff, Chicago could be hurt by this. Anyway, it's a big issue. Number two, I could point to a couple of things. I'll elaborate on it later if you want. But I think, reflecting on everything now, I think Bruce Rauner is now too weak to do a real budget deal. The kind of budget deal he's been talking about since the campaign, where, you know, which would have to include an income tax increase or other big tax increases, that would guarantee he'd be a one-termer. You know, he's alienated now. He's picked fights he didn't need to pick. He's made enemies he didn't need to make. If he now turns around, a la George H.W. Bush, and approves a big income tax increase, whichever Democratic candidate gets nominated in 2 years, isn't that amazing? It's just 2 years. Is going to hang that tax increase around Rauner's neck the way Bill Clinton did around George H.W. Bush's neck. And then I'll just make a final point. Despite the FBI investigation, despite my colleague Dane Placco's revelations about strange land deals and the strange business dealings of her husband, Dorothy Brown wins renomination as the clerk of the circuit court, and that's going to be an interesting contest. Professor?
All right. Very good. Well done. Round of applause for Mike. Dave Cohn, I want you to know your question was just been answered to explain Dorothy Brown. Of course, those of us who know a little bit about the South Side never underestimate the Church of God in Christ.
No, she's the church lady. She's the ultimate church
lady. That's what got her nominated way back when she came to the City Club in the old days, and who were passing out her petitions? The people from her church. And I thought that was, even in this city, pretty impressive.
And then she had two opponents.
Yes.
And, but it's the old Chicago story. She went right up the middle.
She's still downtown Dorothy Brown. Okay. By the way, I could disagree with a couple of things here, but I'm the genial moderator for the moment.
Let's
all right.
Debate. No, no, no. Jump in and let's have at it.
What don't you agree?
Okay. Not that I'm unprepared for this, Charlie, but... Well, I think the Kim Fox thing, you know how much we like her at the City Club. She came here many times before she was even running. But her job is not to be community organizer. Her job is the chief prosecutor. So all the energy and all that stuff, which is, I think was well done and well stated, given you know all these problems we're talking about, but that's really a minor part of her job. Her job is to prosecute the crime that is taking place daily with young people getting shot in the west and south side of Chicago. So I think the less we see of Kim Fox in the next year, the better off she is. She's going to have to get into that office and really, really deal with it. Because when you change state's attorneys in this county, especially the way this happened, you need assistants that are loyal to you. You need assistants who are going to do the job that you want them to do. It's not going to be easy. So she needs to be Ms. Inside, not Ms. Outside. And that's number one. Number two, it shouldn't be as a shock. And Charlie, I have to disagree with you. I once said, and I've repeated it many times, the Marcus of Queensbury rules of no low blows in Chicago. In Chicago and Illinois politics, you wear your trunks around your ankles. There is no such thing as a low blow. Whatever it takes to win, you win. Losers give excuses, winners take office. And so that's one of Professor Green's lines. You could, Charlie, you know that. All right, so I really think that whatever it was, and the fact is, and none of you mentioned this, either with Hillary Clinton or with the woman who beat Duncan, when a president of the United States comes out and endorses in a House primary race, you know there's something behind it. And perhaps it could have been the gentleman jumping up when he was giving his speech in the General Assembly.
Paul, can I tell you? I found out just 2 days ago what was behind it.
Go right ahead.
Okay, let me
Make
explain
news.
That. Because I didn't get it until a couple of days ago. President Obama gave the speech in February about bipartisanship. And that's when Duncan jumped up into his seat and the president said, I'll talk to you later, Duncan. Sit down. Okay, now, the Duncan campaign, before the president did his ad, did a radio ad. And the radio ad was extraordinarily well done. It was a great radio ad. They excerpted the president's speech talking about bipartisanship. Then they would mix in Duncan saying, well, you know, that's what I'm doing and la-di-da-di-da. And at the end of the ad, the president said, we'll talk later, Duncan. No, sit down. We'll talk later, Duncan. It left the impression that the president endorsed Ken Duncan. Did you know about that ad?
Dumb,
have you heard
dumb,
that ad?
Dumb.
Okay. Some people heard it, some people didn't. The president, I would think that if he was told about the ad, would have been livid. What? Ken Duncan is saying I endorsed him? So then the president did the ad, the radio and television ads, endorsing Julia Stratton. He may have been angry about it, and that's the genesis of that. Duncan did something untoward first. Then the president reacted. So... All right. I didn't know that until recently that that's how that came about.
All right. Charlie, I think we've spent enough on a legislative primary race. We got
you
big
brought it
fish.
Up, but
we
I
got
mean,
big
that's,
fish here, okay?
That's what happened.
And besides, no, I won't go there. I have so many more, but I will stop. Read the Star, the old days the Star would have been, the Herald, the Daily Herald. All right. Bob Grover retired. Any validity to the idea that Trump set up the UIC rally?
No.
Well, it was either arrogance or ignorance.
Yeah.
A combination of both, perhaps.
Incompetence.
But, yeah.
That, you know, his Illinois guy, Kent Gray, was a goof. Just
Well, and Snead has today that he didn't pick the Allstate Arena because he was going to save some money by going to the UIC Pavilion. But, you know, come on. What was he
arrogance
thinking?
Or ignorance?
Well, Professor and Marianne and Charles, maybe we should have Pat Brady stand up as a Kasich delegate. Donald Trump carried his sixth congressional district, but Kasich delegate Pat Brady is going to go to the convention because Trump's voters could not bring themselves to vote for a person named Nabi Fakhruddin. That was the Trump delegate's name.
I have my word as an Illinois resident, I will do everything I can to stop this idiot.
But Pat is one of three delegates who were chosen in congressional districts in Illinois in districts that Donald Trump won. There was a delegate named Uribe, an Hispanic name. The Trump voters apparently couldn't bring themselves to vote for somebody with the name Uribe, with the last name Fakhruddin, and I forget the third one. But as a result, Trump doesn't get three delegates he should have gotten. It's nutty!
Isn't it wonderful on this day, if we went back 125 years, Brady would have been the guy that would have got shafted. All right. Kind of true, isn't it? All right, moving along. Kathy Gregg, Friedman Place. Will Supreme Court nominee Garland Merrick, a Niles West grad, be confirmed? Why or why not?
No, quick. Because the Senate's controlled by Republicans.
I think they've pretty much
made it clear.
And I've talked to a couple of folks before this all started this afternoon. I wait and see. Wait until after the election. I mean, it's not going to happen before
November.
Not before November. But let's see what happens. Who wins in November? You want Donald Trump picking? Really?
No.
You want if he wins? You want him to be the guy that picks? I don't know. I Hillary wins, perhaps, and they confirm him. I don't know.
You assume Hillary would pick this guy?
I do.
Okay.
Well, I don't think she would. Well, I take that back. This would not have been her first choice.
Correct. Okay. Well, remember, she went to Maine South.
Heck.
There's a tremendous rivalry. Maine South, Niles West.
And didn't she go to Yale as well, or no?
Yeah, I mean, he went to Harvard.
Yeah.
No chance. What are you That's the way the game is played.
Yeah.
All right. Kathy, I have to read this. Konopasek, is that close? Retired principal. Now that we see Trump and Clinton, VP predictions. Why would Clinton not pick Sanders for VP, and could Trump pick anyone for VP? Very. What school? If
I was at Stevenson Elementary. It's on the far south side, by Ford City.
All right.
Okay.
Good for you. Glad to have you here. Okay. Would Clinton, if she gets the nomination, pick Bernie Sanders?
No.
No. We all agree?
Never.
Because, as you well know, enough is enough. And who would Trump pick?
Well, Chris Christie wants it, but
Chris Christie.
I can't. Gosh, you never know what people will do. I don't.
Well, Ben Carson is angling for it, but I think he needs to pick somebody who knows his way around the world then,
yeah.
Who knows, you know, who can educate Mr.
Your
Trump.
Your last question.
Can fill in those vast empty spots in his
worldview. Everybody talks about the vast empty spots, and I don't mean to, there's a lot of criticism about Donald Trump and what kind of president Donald Trump might be. But, you know, people were saying some similar things about one Ronald Wilson Reagan back in the 1970s about this former actor wants to be president. Get
he
out of here.
He had been a governor.
I know
first.
That. I know
okay.
He had been governor of California for
now
two terms.
Go. Go.
I realize that. But a lot of people were saying Reagan. Well, Reagan's going to take us back to the 1920s. He's going to do this. But I mean, there were a lot of things said in the context of.
All right, remember, you all heard who Trump said would be his chief foreign policy advisor.
Himself.
Maybe he'll pick himself for VP.
That doesn't scare the hell out of you. I don't know what would.
Okay, Ashvin Ladd, the barge man. Where are you, Ashvin? How's that barge coming?
1 year away.
All right. How much credit or blame, well, they'll love this question. How much credit or blame should the media claim for the rise of Donald Trump with their own coverage of him? Whoa. Don't turn on our guests.
Now, don't ask me where NBC had his show, you know, for years. But he sucked the air out of all the room. I mean, for the national coverage and somewhat the local coverage of as well. I feel guilty of not. We didn't cover the U.S. Senate race, the Democratic primary of Duckworth, Zopp and Harris much. The state's attorney's race was much more of an interesting race. But, yeah, of course, I mean, every morning, breathlessly, the early morning shows, and we have Donald Trump, and we have Donald Trump. A phone call from Donald Trump. Who cares? But somebody cares because they're promoting it. They want to hear what he has to say.
Well, you know, some of the things we were saying about Donald Trump, I mean, were, wow, would you vote for this guy? But there was that core of support out there that voted for him despite the horrible things that, and I call them horrible things we were reporting about the guy. There were still people out there that voted for him. And when he would say these outrageous things, what would happen to his poll numbers? They'd go up. You know, there was a core out there that was supporting Donald Trump, that is supporting Donald Trump, that's been there for a long time. I think they called themselves Tea Partiers a few years ago. Some of those same people are still out there supporting Donald Trump.
And Ted Cruz.
Well, Nate Silver's done a brilliant job of tracking that demographic cohort. It's the same group. You can track them. They reappear and coalesce behind a candidate every few years, beginning with George Wallace in the 60s and 68, and then, you know, moving right through Pat Buchanan in the 90s, and Trump has got that same hardcore. But in terms of the TV question, you can Google this when you leave, and I invite you to do that. But the number was, somebody did a study that came out the other day, and they did a serious academic analysis of the value of the free TV, about $2 billion worth of free TV went to Donald Trump. So that's how he was able to spend only $14 million. His self-finance campaign has only spent about $14 million bucks because he's gotten this wall-to-wall coverage.
I have nothing to say. All right. Right along with that, Jackie Robin, right in front, moved her chair, so she really wants to hear this. Who doesn't? That question, whether or not the media should air his, big speech. Oh, you mean the big speech on Tuesday night? I was on WGN Radio, and we cut it off, but did you guys air his speech on TV when he gave us a victory speech?
We had about 4 or 5 minutes of it, then we moved
Trump?
On.
Yeah. I wasn't here, so I didn't.
No, we did not air it live. No, I know. It wasn't the
same. He's talking about
his speech coming up. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Instead of debating with Fox, he's giving a speech. I'm sure the cables will. You know, the cables will, but I doubt that the networks will break in to cover his speech. Yeah.
You got to realize that a club like this would never think of having Donald Trump here. Oh, he was here June 29th, yes.
Overflow.
Doherty and I, if he wins, sub-cabinet positions at least. All right, at least. But we won't serve. All right, Thomas McElroy, level something? You're level one, of course. What is level one? We knew that, right? Okay, level one. How does the political landscape change for the governor when the African-American College of Chicago State closes, first of all, of the state universities? Remember, Rauner did really ramp that vote up in 2014.
Yeah. This is a tough one for him. I mean, they're finishing early so that they can continue to pay the employees, but they will walk away from school at the end of April, taking no spring break. They don't have enough money to pay everyone. How do you say to the students at Chicago State, you're not worth it? You know, we don't care about you. The state has no money for you.
Well, but I think both sides are saying that.
I don't think you can say just the governor is saying that. I think both sides are saying that by not making a deal. What's concerning to me is that the Black Caucus in Springfield, where are they? What are they doing? Are they involved in this conversation at all?
I haven't heard their voices. Speaker Madigan to tell them what to do.
Exactly. You said it, I did.
Well, the governor's got to hit the reset button. He's got to change the narrative. He's got to come out and start campaigning. He's got to be around. This thing that he does now, where he appears a couple times a month, up here at least, and you know is part of the debate. It isn't working for him.
He won't even take the question on what to do with Donald Trump. You know, we chased him out of an event last week, and he won't even stop to take the question. You've got to be prepared for an answer.
You know, he's not a politician, and he doesn't know how to do it. And I think Mike Madigan is, and that's why he won so big Tuesday and Bruce Rauner lost, because Bruce Rauner doesn't know what he's doing, quite frankly, in this game. He might be a great venture capitalist guy, one of the best in the world, but when it comes to politics, he's learning. And the learning curve's kind of steep here.
Wow, put me on the spot. Could you repeat the question, please?
You have it. You have the question.
The court reporter will reread the question.
I forgot the question. I'm reading all the news. What was it?
Chicago State.
Things are so bad. That would just be another layer on the sandwich. I mean, a lot of universities are in trouble. I can name off several of them, right, Charlie? The MAP grant thing is crucial, especially for low-income kids. And so we're in a tight position at Roosevelt. And by the way, just for the record, I'll get to that in a second. You got to give Roosevelt University a real applause, because we had a rally, we hosted a rally for Mr. Sanders, and he wants to give free public education. What would that do to the private universities? But we believe in equality and justice, and please send your donations to Charlie Gardner so we can help out. I think Chicago State is a basket case with or without this. They've had real problems. It's a tough school. I used to be connected with it at the Board of Governors with Governor State. Real problems. They need the money. They keep young people going to school, and that should be the goal. And to close it is just obscene. But remember, when we had that guy, you guys know his name, the budget director for Rauner, Newfield.
Tim Newning.
Who said they couldn't do a budget. The judges need a calculator to do the budget. And I said, gee, you have a few bucks, buy them calculators. All these things that are going bad, you know, pardon my language, because here it comes. My late father, who was in World War II, had a saying, when times of crisis, peons get peed on. I'm done. Okay.
Yeah.
On that note.
You always pick the low-hanging fruit. You always pick the person who can't fight back. If you have 100 people beating up one person, you'll find number 101 a lot faster than you'll find number 2. It's just easier.
You know, Professor, could I just throw in one more observation? I
think, please.
That, apropos of the budget fight and the situation the governor's in. I mean, you know, so we can talk about his job approval rating, and he does have a ton of dough, and he may be able to turn that around. But you know, we saw Madigan. What did Madigan get? About 14,000 votes the other night.
66%.
Yeah. Well, I think it was 14,000 votes. You know, in that little 22nd district down there. And the governor is going to have to run statewide. And that's going to be, right now, I think he's in big trouble. And so, you know, he also has a problem, and he's going to have a big problem come January when Ken Duncan is replaced by Juliana Stratton, because he's going to lose that vote. And Sam McCann, the downstate state senator.
Central Illinois.
You know, they spent, the governor and his allies spent millions of dollars on behalf of a young, attractive, very well-spoken Illinois state trooper named Bryce Benton. And Sam McCann should have been a dead duck. I mean, he lied about having served in the Marine Corps. His mileage reimbursements and other expense reports are being investigated. There's going to be a hearing by a state agency into that. And yet, you know, in a record turnout down there, they kept the Sangamon County polling places open for an extra 90 minutes. There were so many people in line. The governor couldn't beat him.
Mike, you remember.
That's going to embolden, I think, some. There's a handful of them, but it's going to embolden some of the downstate Republicans who have been cozy with the government employee unions, you know, to buck the governor, perhaps.
It's also, though, keep in mind that there is a general election in November, and I think the governor has held some of his bullets for then, when he can take on Democrats mano a mano.
So I'm told Jack Franks is. I've had that same conversation with some of the governor's people, and they're dreaming they're going to knock off Jack Franks up in McHenry County, the one
not
and
as
only.
Long as, not
and
as long
Brandon
as Herb's
Phelps
around.
Downstate.
No.
Yeah.
By the way, Pat Brady, were you state chairman in 2014?
Yes.
Kirk Dillard might have beaten Rauner in the primary because Central Illinois, that area, went overwhelmingly for Kirk Dillard.
Yep.
I mean, against Rauner. There's no love lost there.
Yeah, that's absolutely what happened. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Pat. And, you know, my bigger point is, unless the governor is able to flip a Jack Franks or another seat this fall, Madigan's going to gain the power. Madigan and Cullerton are going to be able to override those vetoes. And then the governor's going to really be in a mess. So the heat's on him now. The stakes have really risen for November for the governor. Now, I got another piece for you, that as long as we're talking about Trump. There is a connection here. The hip bone's connected to the leg bone. Trump would be a catastrophe, I think, statewide, guaranteeing Mark Kirk is gone. But because of this crossover thing and bringing out people bringing out people who haven't voted ever in their lives or haven't voted in 20 years, that just might help the governor to flip some of these downstate Democratic seats. You know, so
Mike, they said 15% more that Democrat
grows, 15%
with a vote.
Wow.
But they won't take a straight party ticket. Well, this is really good. Brady, you know, if you were still state chairman, you'd be up here. Just because you got that delegate thing.
Well, okay. I got to tell you, I mean, we haven't covered it, but this international trade thing, these blue-collar guys who come up to me, white, black, and polka dot, I'm telling you, a dozen of them in the last couple of weeks coming up to me. They hate this TPP thing. They've been getting the newsletters from the auto workers and the SEIU, you know, and they read about this, and Trump is talking about it. And, you know, and Hillary Hillary's husband passed NAFTA.
Isn't it awful that you have to blame the husband? Where are all the women out there?
And she was on record in favor of it, and she spoke warmly about TPP. Now she's backed off it because Sanders has pushed her on it. But, you know, anyway, I think that's...
All right, we have three more questions.
I'm with Charles that it's not always dark and ugly motivations when you talk to Trump supporters.
Okay, take a breath. Charlie Gardner, your answer has already been Trump calling off the debate tonight, and they canceled it. All right, we got three more questions. Steve Abbey, First Merit Bank. Republican convention. Odds of a contested convention and a compromise candidate. 20 seconds each.
Very high chances of a contested convention because of the Kasich win in Ohio. What happens there? You all know better than I, but thank goodness that Pat Brady will be there to help push that along. So if he doesn't have the 1237. If he doesn't have those, obviously they have to vote again, the delegates with inside. But how do you tell the will of the people? How do you tell the people no? I can't wait. It's going to be very interesting to cover.
Easy, Marianne. Easy.
My 20 seconds. The world's greatest deal maker has got to make a deal, and I want to see him do it.
Ditto. Mike, what'd you say?
Ditto.
Ditto.
Next
what?
Next question. Ditto to Charles.
It won't be a contested convention. Professor Green, won't be, can't be.
Why not?
Okay, Charlie's a Roosevelt trustee. I bow to that automatically. U.S. Senate race in Illinois?
U.S. Senate race. Duckworth is the front runner. Absolutely. Perhaps, and I think it also will make a difference of who is at the top of the ticket, who is the presidential nominee from each party. And I think that Mark Kirk, while a lot of folks appreciate that he's tried to be a middle-of-the-road guy, he's lost his party somewhat. And unfortunately, his stroke, there's no way around it. It's difficult to say. And people will be upset to say, why can't he be? But I think there are questions of whether he is able to do his job.
Ooh. Charlie, you could follow that up.
The top of the ticket will be critical, but I've said the same thing that Marianne has said for the last couple of years since the stroke. Can he campaign in this state that is 600 miles stem to stern and do so vigorously as he will have to do because it's going to be close out there no matter who really is at the top of the ticket? This is a blue state, and he's got to try to win it again.
It's going to be tough. I do think Tammy Duckworth's going to have to come out and talk, though. She was hiding under some rock up in Hoffman Estates for this entire primary. I mean, it was ridiculous that she didn't even do the Channel 11 debate. That was...
Well, we save money, by the way. The City Club sponsoring that one. What did she get? What was her percentage? In the 60s?
Yeah.
60s. What happened at Joplin?
I think they thought that we were all going to come running and cover this race, yeah. And yet there weren't enough issues out there. I mean, the state's attorney's race had the issues, so we were out there covering that race, and I think they did suffer from a little bit of the Trump took over the air of the room.
It was Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Right, but they should have also... It's not our job to make their race.
Earned media is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
And she needed to be on the air in November... prior to Thanksgiving, telling us who she was. She couldn't afford it, so by the time she did come up on the air, it was too late.
And even though she has this fabulous resume, being on the Chicago School Board, God bless her, what a tough, awful job. And I mean, I shouldn't say awful, but a very tough job, to be a part of it. It came back to bite her. I mean, she was part of... They approved the $23 million contract, and she closed the 50 schools. So while she had hoped perhaps to parlay that into a political career, in the end, you know, those were negatives rather than positives.
Isn't it amazing that the school board, madam, right over there, yes, that people make the school board like they're the enemy, like they have the money. The school system is broke, and they're closing schools to save money so they can keep the other schools open, and that's a negative. As a public school graduate, I find that really hard to take. But I'm done. Okay. Dan Shull, close enough. This is a good question. People who know Trump, like us City Club people, say that that when you get past the bluster, remember him? Phineas T.? No baby boomers in this audience. Ah, there we go. That he is very pragmatic. And this fellow says he's a Kasich supporter. Has anyone ever seen Donald Trump pragmatic?
I've interviewed him once several years ago for his show, but he's charming, he's nice, he's pleasant. But his TV persona is, it's difficult to get beyond that. So perhaps they do say, I believe Ben Carson the other day when he endorsed him said, I've gotten to meet the real. Well, usually what you see is what you get. You know, you see us, this is what you get. I mean, I think that's him. That's who he is.
Well, I had a chance to interview him once. He didn't impress me as being a Nazi or a Klansman. I think that, which was injected into this last couple of waves of primaries, is ridiculous. I don't think he's a Nazi or a Klansman. I think he's an egomaniac, clearly, and he's into Donald Trump. I think we're going to see, if he is in fact the nominee, he'll be vetted by the public then, really, as compared to the Democratic candidate.
Right? I think there's a real ugly side to Donald Trump, and you know, you may have seen the ad of the women, the pack that just had the women reading the things Donald Trump has said about women. And there's another round of that stuff that's come out today. If you go on Twitter, you can see David Corn from Mother Jones has all these quotes. Somebody asked Mr. Trump in this interview that was recorded apparently a while back, well, would you stay with Melania if she suffered a disfiguring accident? And apparently, without missing a beat, Trump said, what do the breasts look like? Go on, you know, Google it when you leave. So there's another round of this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a really ugly side to this.
Well, I thought I brought the City Club down to a low level with my father's line, but no, you more than beat that. All right, well, that's a whew. Well, all I can say, when we were with him that day of June 29th, we were stirring the thing. He was, of course, we just started off. He was, he was cordial and quick and, you know, he didn't insult almost anybody, as I remember. I can't remember. All right.
He was pragmatic, but he took his company bankrupt.
Well, you know that, Charlie. I don't want to blow my chance at a sub-cabinet position. Okay. The last question is a very serious question from Tom Donovan. Will James Comey, that's how he pronounces his name, Comey, have the courage to recommend a Hillary indictment? Ooh, I saved that for last in case fisticuffs break out. I can scram.
Wow.
I'll repeat it. Will James Comey have the courage to recommend a Hillary indictment?
Well, we know where you stand by the way the question is worded. And I guess there are many that feel that way. There are many others who do not and disagree. I find it very hard for the Obama administration to indict her, yes. Probably not.
I would say no, because I don't think that the United States Attorney's Office, at least my faith in it, that they act in a vacuum, that if they were going to do this, they would have done it some time ago. Because they wouldn't want to put this republic in crisis.
Mike.
I think Comey has the courage to do it if the facts call for it. We've gotten Josh Earnest is on the record saying, based on what he wouldn't say, but that the facts at this point don't indicate that. And Hillary said just the other day that she's not been advised that she's a criminal target. But I think Comey is a straight shooter. And I think if the facts had mandated, you know, called for her to be indicted, I think he does have the courage to do that.
All right. How about a big round of applause?